Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We do it every day at 4 o'clock here with Bob, Dave, and more. We talk football with a Professor John Clayton, who is joining us from, I assume, sunny South Beach. Is it sunny out there, John?
Now we've moved to Marlin Park because, of course, you know, we got the opening night, which, of course, is now just starting at 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock West Coast time. And so we are now at Marlin Park, and I would effectively say this is the biggest Marlin crowd that's been here in at least 4 to 5 years.
is it warm? That's the question.
Well, it's got to be more than like 5,000 or 6,000. So it's like, because you got, you know, roughly, I guess, 1,000 of the 3,000 media people here. You've got fans in the stands. I mean, you've got all these different things going on, you know, to kind of celebrate the Super Bowl week. But again, it's like, you know, the Marlins don't draw, but at least this draws.
John, why don't you want to give me a weather report? What is going on here?
Oh, you want a weather report?
Yes, I'm asking. Is it warm there? Is it nice? Is it South Beach?
It's warm. It's 69 degrees. Humidity is probably at about 95%, but it's warm.
Okay.
Are you sweaty?
Well, the only thing I stopped was, like, we're not at Miami Beach right now. We've now moved to Marlins Park.
All right. Well, give us a scene setter. First day of the Super Bowl, it's always a little light. You don't have quite as many people. It really hits its stride on Wednesday. But what was today like? And what's the conversation just in terms of the matchup? Do you feel like everybody's picking the 49ers? Do you feel like it's 50-50? What's it like?
I think there's more of an edge right now to the Chiefs, and that's mainly because of Patrick Mahomes. But I think the one thing that, when you talk about today still was a little bit down, and so much of it's Kobe. I mean, the Kobe thing is, I think, still on everybody's mind. I know on Radio Row today, it was, it's quiet. I mean, again, it wasn't totally quiet because you still have some guys screaming, and you know that from, you know, being here and watching Super Bowls on Media Row. But it was probably as, you know, reserved as you can see it because, I mean, everybody yesterday, because I know when they came in, I didn't get in until about 8 or 9, but everybody has heard what happened. And apparently with everybody setting up on Sunday for some of the radio shows, I mean, there was like a massive pause by everybody because they were still trying to adjust to the news that Kobe Bryant had died in a helicopter accident. So I think that's playing into a little bit. So I think it's going to take probably until Tuesday and Wednesday, you know, to get back a lot of the Super Bowl hype. Now, it looks like there's good energy right now as we start the session for the opening night. So that's encouraging. But overall, it's I think we're real subdued because of Kobe. I know that they gave a opening salute to Kobe. A lot of the players here are still wearing some Kobe stuff. So there's great respect for the loss of Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, John, we definitely got that from some of our texters and everything here. Everybody's shaking up about that. All right, well, getting back to the Super Bowl, tell us who is somebody you saw today or talked to that was your favorite? I know you run into a ton of people down there at the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. No, it was fun today. I mean, you know, first it was fun running into Luke Wilson, because I ran into him when he was checking in to get his credentials, and so had him on the air right after he did a 12:30 hit at Marlins Park. And of course, I wanted to make sure I saw him. I just did like about 20, 25 minutes ago because he had his TV outfit on, and so I have to always laugh about that. So we were able to catch up with him, able to catch up with Tony Boselli, you know, talking about his chances of getting into the Pro Football Hall of Fame this weekend. Real good talk with Ross Tucker, you know, talking about the Hall of Fame, talking about offensive lines in general. We had good, good conversations on that. I mean, it's been a very, very good day because, I mean, it's been pretty well loaded up with really good guests. And you know how it is. It's like all of a sudden you're sitting there and a good guest sits down right next to you and you say, you start the interview and it can go very well. So Radio Row is a goldmine for just getting interviews and people coming on, and you know, our lineups are getting overcrowded right now. As far as, you know, people talking about the game, people talking about the league, all those different things.
All right, John. So I heard on Luke Wilson on your show. What was his suit? You were mentioning some kind of like a monkey suit. What was he wearing?
Well, when I saw him, he was pretty much just, his hair was up, and he was, you know, pretty much just like a, you know, almost in sweatpants and all that stuff, because he hadn't moved over to his TV outfit. He had to get the credentials and then go upstairs, change his clothes. But he's dressed in a tall blue outfit, a nice tie and all that stuff. So, you know, he's, you know, making sure that you could see his length because, again, being a tall guy like he is, he wanted to show that off. And so he looked good there. And, of course, it's always just fun to talk to him because, in fact, I know I'm going to get bombed on the field by him, you know, once I go down to the field, because he wants me to do a Canadian accent, so I got to get that. And, again, he wants me to talk Canadian.
Nice.
Okay, can you give us a boot?
Go ahead and practice a little bit, John. You want to try and practice?
Got to do a little bit of music. Got that going. And then, of course, I got to do, yeah, I don't know about that. I got to do one of those.
Yeah. Say, what's this about?
Yeah. I'll take any suggestions.
All right, I'll work some.
You got to throw in an A.
Text him to you, John, later on.
You got to throw in an A in
good
there,
to
John.
See you, Luke A.
Yeah, is it slim chance that he'll be back with the Seahawks, though, right, John?
I think so, because, you know, they've either got to, you know, because with Will Disley coming back from the major injury, you know, Ed Dixon most likely not going to be here. I mean, you basically have Jacob Hollister, and that's about it. And so you figure that they may draft one, they may sign somebody. So they, but, you know, just on a one-year deal, I mean, I think, you know, Luke was able to do that on a minimum salary deal. I think he considered doing it because he really likes it here and he likes it in the locker room. So it wouldn't surprise me if he can come back. I mean, it may be one of those things. It's not going to be at the beginning of free agency. It'd be probably toward the middle or the back part of free agency. But, no, I think there's a decent chance he can come back because he means a lot to the team and to the locker room.
Hey, we were talking earlier, and Jake Heaps had an opinion just talking about Russell and Pete being out there at the Pro Bowl and mingling with these players and somehow maybe recruiting on some level and that people will want to come play here after they've been around them. How much does that come into play today? Do you think, John, and Dave was asking the question, do you think it's gotten to a point where a guy would, let's say he's in line for an $18 million deal and he looks at the Seahawks and the Seahawks can only give him $16 million. The idea that they're a perennial playoff team, that they've got Pete, they've got Russell, they've got one of the top-notch facilities in all of football, do you think there are guys that are starting to look at Seattle as a place they would play and maybe it doesn't have to be the highest offer in the world?
I think there always has been, because I even go back to the days of Osio Mignore and some of the veteran guys. I think it's more what you're looking at is 27, 28-year-old guys that have been around, seen the good, seen the bad, and I think they're the ones that would be more prone to do it. Now, again, when you got a guy like Ndonkwe who's coming on, and even to a degree Clowney, and you're going for that second contract, and you're one of the top two pass rushers in your position, I mean, it's hard to take that discount because you know how much money there's going to be. You know, I think Clowney would do it below Ndonkwe because Ndonkwe is one that you know, he seems to be resistant even in what the Jaguars are thinking. Because I think, you know, and it's funny because you know, most people – I mean, you know, if you're going to be Clowney and you're going to be a Yannick, you're looking at it's like, okay, we want Frank Clark money. We want the, you know, the $22 million, something of that nature, DeMarcus Lawrence. And, of course, I think the model right now that the teams are looking for, particularly the 4-3 teams or even the pass rushing teams, is the 16-8 that went to Za'Darius Smith, who went to Green Bay. So I think there's a little bit of a difference on both sides, but that'll be settled. And, of course, a lot of that has to go with what happens here in the next week, because, you know, this league and the Players Association may be on the verge of getting a collective bargaining agreement. And if it's going to be the 17 games, it may not necessarily affect next year's cap. If they go 17 games in 2021 with the extra playoff games and all that, that there's going to be a bigger jump. So I think that that has to be settled first, because if you're talking new CBA, that, I think it takes the cap above $200 million unless they take that money and put it into benefits.
So what's the bigger sticking point on the CBA? Is it the 17-game season or the percentage that the players want?
Well, you have to break it into two categories. The category is, are you talking union or are you talking players? If you're talking union, they could do a deal right now and accept it for 17 games and two additional playoff games, and a lot, some adjustments and a lot of things, but the union's willing to do that. The problem is we don't know if the players are willing to do it, because, you know, and that's what's going to be the contention this week. It's like, for example, one of the things we were hearing today is that they were trying to see on the executive committee if they could try to take a vote, and it doesn't look like that ended up happening today. But on Thursday, there's going to be a meeting with the player reps, you know, the 32 player reps, and there was also going to be a meeting with the agents. And so there still seems to be resistance from the players and the player reps on the 17 game, doing 17 games. And right now, the league is pushing so hard for the 17, they may not do 16. If the players say, hey, we want 16, not 17, now it's going to be up to the league to say, okay, you want to hold out or not. And at this stage, I mean, I think that they could easily get a deal done for 16. I think they can also do it for 17 if they can get the players and the player reps on board. But that vote hasn't been taken. We'll get a better idea. Actually, I'll find out a little bit more tonight, and then I'll definitely find out more on Thursday, because D. Smith has three meetings: the agents, the player reps, and us, the media.
Yeah, and I think the player rep for the Seahawks, is it KJ? Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm not sure, but I think it is KJ.
It could be Bobby, too, I think I've heard. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think you – there's not a better guy to have his hands on it than KJ. So, great leader there. But, yeah, I think it might be him and Bobby both. Is it just one, John, or maybe I'm wrong about that?
No, it's one per team.
Just one.
One player rep per team.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's KJ.
All right, John, it's early in the week. We're 6 days away from the Super Bowl, but what kind of a feel are you getting for the outcome of the game?
You know, it's still so early because, I mean, this is now the first media availability tonight. There's going to be one tomorrow morning, but most people can't get there because there's no bus service available from the media session. So it's like that's going to be a little bit tough, and anybody working on Media Row has no chance of making it. So we won't get a good feel for that. It's just, you know, a weird transportation thing. But the one thing I've realized from covering 43 of those, you can't be a reporter and complaining about being in 69-degree weather with 98% humidity and complain about transportation. Nobody wants to hear it. But no, but overall, I think the feeling is, you know, it's a great matchup. Now, again, the feeling was a little bit off today, mainly because you had so much, you know, carryover from the Kobe thing. But it's really going to pick up this week and get so much better. And that's where I think it's going to be fascinating, because you've got two good offenses. I mean, you got a 49er offense that averaged 29.9 points a game. It's the second best running team in the league. And you got Patrick Mahomes, who two-thirds of his games, he ends up scoring 30 points or more.
Well, John, I think it's easy to sit here and say, well, San Francisco's got the better defense, but is that necessarily the case? Because I was reading some stats on Kansas City and how well they've been playing defensively the last part of the season.
Yeah, I mean, you know, say what you want, because I even talked to a couple Kansas City radio stations today, and I said, if I would have told you at the beginning of the season that the Chiefs' defense would give up less than 20 points a game, would you believe me? And they said no. Well, the Chiefs' defense gave up in the 19s. Now, again, I know they played some easy games. Everybody played some easy games and all that stuff, but they did better than anybody except. And now, again, are they great in stopping the run? No. Are they great at defense? No. But, you know, if you have an offense that's going to score, you know, 28 points and a defense that gives up 19, which is what Pete Carroll's always aspiring to do and did for a couple of years, at least in the Super Bowl years, you know, you're going to win 12, 13 games. You're going to get home field advantage, or you're able to get home games in the playoffs. And so they've got that formula. So Steve Spagnuolo's done a great job, and I mean a great job, of fixing up that defense.
Hey, John, which way are you leaning? We won't hold you to this. You can change your mind. You got a whole week to sit here and break this game down. But as we talk today, which are you leaning more towards, the Chiefs or the 49ers?
I'm going toward the Chiefs, mainly because of quarterbacks. I mean, you know, it's a quarterback-driven league, and if the quarterbacks keep on, I mean, because, again, it's like, I'm not faulting Jimmy Garoppolo, because, again, anybody that doubts him better look at the New Orleans game, where he threw for 345 yards, and he scored 38 points and out-dueled Drew Brees on the road in a shootout. So you can't doubt him, but then how do you even question what you can see from a great quarterback in Patrick Mahomes, who consistently can score on any touchdown drive. And then he's got the fastest pass-catching core in football, you know, with a 4.29 Tariq Hill, a 4.31, a 4.33 Mecole Hardman, and then a tall receiver in Sammy Watkins, who is 4.43. I mean, and then, of course, Travis Kelce's 4.61. As it was said by, the defensive coordinator Robert Salah of San Francisco, that's a track meet. I mean, that's like going against the Olympic team.
Hey, John, Andrew Berry, who left the Cleveland Browns, he was the vice president of player
17
personnel.
Years old.
He's 17?
No, I'm just kidding. He's 32. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he looks young, man.
Years old coming from Harvard.
And he went to the Eagles for a year. Now he's back. Good move. What do you know about him?
Oh, he's good. I mean, he's one of the bright young minds in the league. And, you know, I'm surprised that he took it, because, I mean, he wanted to get out of there. I know that, a couple of different stops that he had, he was hopeful to get out. And, of course, you know, he was there during the analytics period, and that's one of the reasons they wanted him. Now, again, you know, they had John Dorsey. You know, they preferred probably to to get George Payton, but I know that I think that he could have done this for a couple of reasons. One, they gave him a little bit more power than he expected, but I think the other reason that he took the job is that minority general managers. I mean, here's a bright guy that at some point was going to get a general manager job, and maybe it's not the optimum thing, but he knows the Cleveland people. He got a little bit more authority. Now we'll see where it sorts out as far as Paul DePodesta, baseball analytics guy. And of course, Barry is a football analytics guy. So it's kind of an interesting matchup, but, it's always weird what happens in Cleveland, but he's a good man and it's a good hire.
All right, John, in Minnesota, we know that Gary Kubiak's going to be the offensive coordinator, but Mike Zimmer announced today that he's going to have co-defensive coordinators, including his son. What do you think about that move?
Not surprising. I mean, that rumbling was out there a couple weeks ago that, if there was going to be a change in defensive coordinators. And, of course, everybody knew from the end of the season that George Edwards' contract was up and he was not coming back. And so now it's a matter that it's kind of a similar thing to what's going on in the New England Patriots, because Bill Belichick has his son very involved in the defensive scheme. But this can be very dangerous because, with a co-defensive coordinator, are they going to be on the same page? Or does that mean that Mike Zimmer is going to be calling the defensive plays? How's that going to work? But, it's a little dangerous, I think, in the eyes of Mike Zimmer, because he's really entering the last year of his contract. They extended his contract by 1 year. My guess is that they'll do the same thing, just so it looks like he has 2 years left in the contract. But the problem is that if he doesn't get the playoff win, he may not be able to keep his job.
All right, John, we know that the prop bets are part of the fun of a Super Bowl week. Demi Lovato is singing the – did I say her name right, Bob?
You did.
Okay, Demi Lovato. She's singing the national anthem.
Why didn't you ask me if you said it right, Jim?
Dave, did I get it right?
I have no idea.
Have you heard of her? Oh. Yeah. Well, she's singing the national anthem, and you can bet on how long it's going to take her to sing it, John. A minute 56 is the over-under. Professor, does she take longer than 156 or under? You're taking the over?
Hasn't there been some 210s and 212s?
Jennifer Hudson was 210 in 2009.
I'm going for the over.
Lady Gaga, 2 minutes and 9 seconds.
Of course, the professor knows that.
But the average is right at 156.
Which way are you going to go, Jim?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think what you look at is that this is going to be the Super Bowl of over. I mean, the normal game in the NFL was like 46 points. The over-under is like 54-1. It's like now you have a national anthem and an emotional time in the country, with the loss of Kobe Bryant and that. I mean, I think it's going to be, and of course, you got an impeachment thing going on, too. I'm going to go for the 210.
Hey, John, did you read this transcript of the back and forth between the officer that pulled over Kareem Hunt and between the two of them? I mean, this, if I ever get pulled over again,
I didn't read the transcript, but.
I hope I get an officer like this guy. He couldn't have been nicer to Kareem Hunt. They've got all of this quoted here. He says, I understand you're with the Browns and all of that. You have my word. If there's nothing in that car, I'm just going to give you a traffic ticket. Traffic ticket's not going to get you in trouble. We constantly stop athletes around here because you're all working in Cleveland. It's just a traffic ticket. You're not going to get in trouble, man. I mean, he was just – you read this thing back and forth, and then obviously they pull the bag of weed. Apparently he had an open container of vodka in the car as well.
Mm-hmm.
Does that change anything in terms of what you think the league might do when they see, there was weed, and then he had an open container of vodka in the car as well as speeding and all that? Does it change what may happen?
I don't think it's going to help. I mean, I think it's still going to come down to, what the authorities in Cleveland do with him and to him and all those different things. Because if he's found guilty or he pleads guilty, I mean, it's going to be an increase in suspension. Because, again, he had the 8-game. I don't know if they're going to take it to 12 or whatever. But, I mean, these things he cannot do. I mean, it's like you're not on double secret probation because everybody knows you've had violations. And because of the fact that he's already had an 8-game, it's like there's almost no wiggle room right now. So, I mean, he's got to have a good lawyer right now trying to get him off any kind of a charge, because if not, he's in trouble.
John, enjoy your time out there. Sunscreen. Use sunscreen when you're out there in the Speedo on the beach. I want you to use sunscreen. Okay, John?
Speedo on the beach, that's not a good look for me.
No, it's not.
It's not a good look for anybody, John. I don't really care who it is.
Maybe, no, you, but you have that MMA training, so it's like...
I don't need a Speedo.
It may be okay for you.
No.
I mean, for Wyman, you know, it's a little shaky.
Hey, hey, come on.
A little shaky. John.
Hey, take off, you hoser.
Hey,
there's some Canadian for you.
John, yeah, we'll talk to you tomorrow, eh?
All right, sounds good.
Sorry.
There you go.
Don't forget to say you're sorry.
There's the professor, John Clayton. Yeah, reading this back and forth with the officer, this guy seems like the coolest cop ever because he's talked about, hey, if I don't find anything, you'll just get a speeding ticket. And then he went and found the plastic bag of marijuana. He came back and said, you know, showed it to him, and Hunt said, hey, it's the off season. Sorry, I was having a good time. And the officer said he'd still only write a traffic ticket, but he would seize the backpack.
Well, why'd he search his car in the first place?
Well, yeah. I think he was driving erratically.
Yeah, so, because don't you usually, when you get a speeding ticket, they're not searching your car.
But he smelled the marijuana. But he said, yeah, I found this, but I'm still just going to write you a traffic ticket. Okay. I mean, couldn't have been nicer to. He says, I hate to say this, but you, of anybody, should know if you're going to stay good, stay on the right path, this is not the way to go. I mean, you had like a good second part of the year. You don't want to screw that up over some weed. This is the cop saying to him was... He said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to write you a traffic ticket, then I'll just seize this stuff. Fair enough. I'm not going to write you a weed ticket either. Just don't lie next time.
That is cool.
And he did get all that done?
Yeah.
I wonder if the police officer is going to get in trouble for being that lenient.
I don't know how it works. I don't know if they have that flexibility as a cop to determine if a guy's really cooperative, if they have some leeway. I'm sure we have officers listening. But
yeah, what if it was just average Joe citizen?
Yeah, probably wouldn't have gotten that break, right?
I don't know how you guys are, but I am super compliant.
Oh, yeah.
When I get pulled over.
Yes, sir. Whatever you say, sir.
You know who gets kind of sassy? My wife.
Really?
She does?
Yes, and she never does that, but she always...
Start barking at him?
Well, and one time, I swear to God, I'd never have said this ever in our relationship. I was like, shut up, because he was getting ready to let me go. You know, and she's like, well, you did this, and we blah, blah. I was like, shut up.
You're making this worse.
Yeah. How long have you been married?
28.
And that was the only time you ever said shut up to your wife?
Oh.
Jim's gone. That's a daily occurrence for me.
It's the only one I can remember, Jim.
Yeah.
Jim's, when's the last time you said that?
It might have been over the weekend. There were a couple of more words in there, too.
Oh, geez.
Jim, I hope.
Yeah. But like you, I'm very compliant.
That nobody's listening. Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
License? Sure.
Jim,
registration?
I tell you this
sure.
Every time. My couch is always open to you. Okay.
Thank you. I might need that.
You can bring River.
Might have been this
really?
Weekend.
I can bring River?
Sure. Yeah, him and Hoover can play in the backyard.
All right. Good stuff from the professor. We'll talk to him again tomorrow live from South Beach. Coming up, our very own Michael Bumpus had a very special place in his heart for Kobe Bryant. We'll hear from him next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It's one of the better texts we've gotten in a while. Somebody referring to Dave Wyman as a saintly bro. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. Can I read Jim's response to
him? Is that rich? Is that rich, Jim?
No, it's thank you, Jim. It makes me feel a bit better knowing this is from the 360. It makes me feel a bit better knowing that I'm not alone and telling my wife to shut it. Wyman is a saintly bro with an exemplary quality about him. And I just wrote back to the 360. Hey, 360. And hopefully Kathy's not listening. If Dave were married to my wife, things might be different.
Oh.
Thanks for listening.
Jim, again, the couch is open.
Oh, my gosh.
You can have free access. Make yourself at home in the refrigerator.
She's not listening.
That might become a bigger reality than you think, Dave.
Well, my limit is a week.
Oh,
you can live with us for a week.
A week?
You got to patch things up.
I respect your honesty, but sometimes some things are better left unsaid.
Well, since I'm already in the hole here, we'll get to Michael Bumpus here in a second. Last night we're watching this show called You on Netflix. It's a really it's fantastic, the show.
Yeah.
And yet there's always this running commentary while I'm trying to you can't really hear what they're saying if someone else is talking.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so
you got to get the closed caption. That way you can read it.
Oh, anyway, all right. Let's bring in, before Jim gets in any more trouble. Let's bring in Michael Bumpus, who joins us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Michael, what's going on, man?
You know, other than listening to Jim get in trouble,
I know, right?
just sitting here with the kids, playing a little Madden, doing some reflecting.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. You know, we want to keep Jim out of trouble here, so let's shift to the fact that, you know, obviously the biggest news, not and I was saying not just in sports but just period, was the passing of Kobe Bryant, a guy who certainly transcended his sport. He's a guy that people knew by his name, one name. When you can go by one name, whether it's Madonna, it's Kobe, it's, you know, you're a one name person, you've reached a different level of notoriety and a different level of fame. And he's somebody that obviously had a huge impact in your life. Just talk about where that started. Did you ever get a chance to interact with him?
Man, it really all started through my grandmother. When he was drafted by the Hornets and then traded to the Lakers when he was 17, my grandmother made me read this article in the LA Times. And she said, you know, follow this kid. I think he's going to be really special. My grandma is the reason why I was really into sports anyway. She made me read the sports section every day before school. So I started following him, and, you know, he was 17 and I was what, 12, 11, something like that. So, and I was just so amazed at how a kid who just got out of high school is going to play in the NBA. And then you see him out there, he's playing with the big boys, and I just fell in love with his game. You know, I grew up playing basketball and aspired to be like Kobe. Of course, never really touched that level, but as I got older, I just started really getting into, of course, what everyone talks about, just his mentality and how he approached the game. And I really tried to take that and bring it into football. And, you know, there were times when, you know, my team was sorry in high school. There were three good years, one bad year. And we'd get our butts kicked. And my mom would always tell me, she goes, man, you got to be like Kobe. Just go get yours. Go get yours. No matter what. You play your hardest, go get yours. So I fell in love with him then, and then as a grown man, as an adult, you know, I saw his transformation, you know, from that horrible, I guess, time in Denver, and him having to get in front of the media and his wife and admit fault and kind of bounce back from that. And the way he played during that time too, I don't think people remember when Kobe was going through that trial, man, he was dropping like 30, 40 points. He went to Denver, hit a game winner in front of a crowd that was booing him, and he just had a way of blocking everything out, and I was just amazed by it, and just, I wanted to have that same type of mentality. And you know, he was a special, and to see him go at 41, I was devastating. You know, my middle child, I named him Kobe after Kobe Bryant, and he just really meant a lot to myself, my family, and you know, all the dudes I grew up with. I mean, we've been texting. I mean, our thread is so long right now; it's ridiculous.
Well, Michael, first of all, it sounds like your grandma's badass. I mean, telling you to coaching you up like that. Yeah, tell us a little bit about how you found out about the news yesterday.
So I was my wife was in Palm Springs on a retreat. So I had all the kids. We got up early. We're driving down to Tacoma. My son Michael, my oldest son, had a 7-on-7 tournament, and we're driving down there, and everyone's asleep. All the kids in the back are asleep except for my middle child, Kobe. And he loves talk radio. He likes listening to you guys and myself when I'm on. So we listen to talk radio together. And they're talking about LeBron passing Kobe on the all-time scoring list. They make a joke talking about how many times Kobe used to shoot, and me and Kobe are laughing. And before we step out the car, before I wake everybody up, we get the news on the radio that he passed away, and he looks at me. He's like, "Kobe's dead." I'm like, "That's what they're saying, man." And he couldn't wrap his mind around it. So, and I couldn't either. So we get out the car, we get to the field, and all the adults are talking about it. And Kobe comes up to me again, my son Kobe. He goes, "Dad, is Kobe really dead?" I'm like, "Yeah, man, he's gone." And after doing my research, I found out what happened, and now my son Kobe wants to know how. And I told him it was in a helicopter accident. And, you know, he's like, "So what do we do?" And I told him, I said, "Man, now it's up to you. You just be great at anything. I don't care what it is. If it's math, history, science, football, whatever it is, you go be great and just follow in his footsteps." And that's why I named you Kobe.
Wow, Michael, was there a game or a move or anything off the court that in particular stood out to you about Kobe Bryant?
A move, man. The move that I saw frequently from Kobe is, man, he would drive the lane, and you defender would go for a steal, and he wrapped the ball around his back. He laid up. He wrapped around his back. He dunk it. And he had sneaky hops, man. Like, he wouldn't hang in the air for a while and dunk like Vince Carter, but he'd get up in a hurry and just slam it on you, man. And he was so smooth, you know. He wasn't, like, the most athletic guy out there, but he was athletic enough to dunk on you, but so skilled. And I remember that, and I remember his shot in Portland. It was, like, 1 second left on the clock. They were up in Portland. Catches the ball about 3 or 4 feet outside the three and just makes. And I always remember whenever Kobe had the ball, I never thought he was going to miss. It was kind of like, I remember when I was young, when Michael Jordan went to the free throw line, I never thought he would miss. Like, Jordan doesn't miss free throws. Whenever Kobe had the ball and it was time to make a shot, I never thought he would miss. And I honestly can't remember when he missed. I know he did, obviously, but he made so many, and I was just so in love with who he is and who he was. I can't even remember him missing a big shot.
Did you pretend being him in the driveway?
Oh, all the time, man. Countdown from 9 seconds. Western Conference Finals, playing against the Suns. I mean, everybody did that, man. Whenever Kobe did something in the playoffs, the next day at school, me and all my boys would get to school early. School started like at 8 o'clock. We get there at 7 and play a pickup game, and we all be trying to do what Kobe does. So, in L.A., man, he's a huge deal. And I know some people – I was listening to your show earlier, and I know some people feel some type of way about him because of what happened in Denver. And they're allowed to feel that way. And no one really knows what happened except for Kobe and that young lady. What I want people to recognize is that it takes a man to get up in front of the whole world with his wife by his side and admit that he messed up. And then the way that he carried himself from then – is amazing. It's almost like he transformed himself into just different figures. So, I mean, people are allowed to feel the way they feel. It's America. You do what you got to do. But don't forget who he was after that.
Yeah, it's a complex issue. He's a human being like everybody else. Human beings are complex. They're nuanced. So it's not just a easy he's this or that. But let me ask you quickly, we're up against the break. I know he's your favorite player. Is he the best player ever? I don't think there's a wrong answer. Some say it's Jordan. Some will say Kobe. Some will say Wilt. Some will say LeBron. Who are you? If you're being as objective as possible, greatest basketball player ever?
Well, I'm biased. My son's name is Kobe. You already know where I'm going with that. Kobe all day, man. I respect Jordan. I respect LeBron. I respect Oscar Robinson, Elgin Baylor, Jerry West, all the greats, but man, I'm biased as hell, and I got to go with number 8, number 24, Kobe Bean Bryant.
All right, Michael, hey, thanks so much for taking a few minutes with us, man. We appreciate it, and I'm sure we'll be seeing you in the building here soon.
No problem, guys. Thanks. Have a good one.
Thanks, Bump.
There you go. Michael Bump is some good thoughts there, a guy who obviously a massive fan, doesn't get bigger than that. You start naming your children after people.
Yeah.
That shows a...
Well, and I like the qualifier at the end, you know, like he said. I mean, there's mixed feelings about it, and everybody's allowed to, you know, think about. I would just say, you know, before you text in anything that's super nasty, calling them names, whatever, maybe let some time pass.
Yeah, it's everybody's entitled to feel how they – I mean, some feel like you shouldn't be entitled to your own opinion on it. It should mirror theirs. But, again, it's a complex issue. Humans are complex. And he's had an interesting storyline. I mean, he's lived his life in front of the public eye. He's been under a camera, under the lens of a camera since the age of 18. So you see, that's the, you know, athletes, entertainers, musicians, what have you. We always prop them up as something different, but they're human beings. They make the same mistakes. I'm not minimizing what he did by any stretch, but, you know, we see every element, right? We see Kareem Hunt get pulled over. How many just ordinary Mo's are getting pulled over every day for speeding, and then they find something in the, oh, what's that bag of stuff in there? And that's an everyday event, but it's not being put up on ESPN.com, you know, so they live a different life. It's a completely different existence. So good stuff from Michael. We appreciate his time. Meanwhile, Russell Wilson wanted to put on a show at the Pro Bowl. We're going to hear from him when we sweep the dial next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore. Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Man, I've been through a lot, officer. I've been through a lot.
I know you have, trust me.
Man, through the trenches, man.
So if it's just a traffic ticket, You have my word, okay? If it's nothing in that car, I'm just going to give you a traffic ticket.
Just give me a traffic ticket, please. Yes, sir.
Right?
Yeah.
So you know about this stuff, right?
It's my brother.
I hate to say this, but I mean, you of anybody should know that, like, if you're trying to, like, stay good, stay on the right path, all that stuff, this is not the way to go yet, man.
No, it's not. It's not. I'm sorry.
Well, there's the audio of the story I was reading earlier. The interaction between Kareem Hunt and the police officer that pulled him over for speeding, found marijuana in the car, and then an open container of vodka. Seemed like a really cool guy, talking about the cop. Like, he really was like, hey, man, I'm just going to give you a traffic ticket. I'm going to seize this stuff. And it sounded like Kareem was crying almost. He was like, man, I've been through a lot. I'm sorry, I don't have sympathy for Kareem Hunt. That did not engender any sympathy for me. You've been through a lot because you kicked a woman in the face, man. It was of your own doing.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, and after that, I mean, you'd think he'd be on the straight and narrow. So it's unfortunate. Sure is a good talent, but we were talking about this. I am very overly compliant when it comes to being pulled over. Like, I don't want any trouble. Don't want any trouble here. And sounds like he was being okay there, but kind of a sad story for him. I mean, I know nobody's going to have much sympathy for him, but I don't mean his individual story, but when you see players that are so unbelievably talented and they can't get out of their own way, Antonio Brown being one of them.
He seems like he's functioning dealing with something different. Whereas Kareem seems like he's just making some really bad decisions, whereas I think there's something going on.
But there's ways to get help
for
both of them, right? There's ways to get help.
Yep.
I think if you want to be the best, you got to smell it, you got to breathe it, you got to see it, you got to visualize it, you got to think about it, you got to work for it, you got to believe every time you step on the field, any time you step in between the white lines. I'm trying to put on a show. I once read something one day that was really inspiring to me. It said, you know, don't just give a speech, put on a show. Every time I step on the field, I want people to have a picture of what I did, you know, what it looked like. And I want kids around the world to try to emulate it. I think ultimately, I'm doing it for every time that everybody said I couldn't do it.
There you go. The voice of Russell Wilson.
Are you so glad that he's our quarterback?
Love the guy.
I mean,
love him.
Remember how when we were doing radio before, when it was 50-50, you know, hurt Matt Hasselbeck. We got T-Jack, who couldn't really win a game in the end.
Whitehurst. You got...
brought in, Interception Jesus.
Clipboard Jesus.
I remember when Clayton told us that T-Jack was coming in, and it was everybody, what? You're bringing him in? So, you don't have to...
500 quarterback. He's...
And all the other teams, all the other cities in the country that are talking about their quarterback, whether he's a franchise quarterback or not, or they need to move on from so-and-so, and... It's never an issue here.
Yeah, I think Danny said one time, I thought it was very well said, the worst thing is having the wrong franchise quarterback.
That's Cleveland.
Exactly, and they should see that. But also, you know, what about Matthew Stafford? I mean, he's got good numbers, right? But he can't take him to the playoffs, and he can't win in the playoffs.
Yeah, I always equate it to NBA teams, and you didn't have a better example than the Seattle Supersonics trying to find a center. It's that rare thing. It's almost the unicorn, finding that franchise quarterback that can get you to the promised land. It's like an NBA team just year after year drafting Johan Petro and drafting, you know.
Robert Swift.
Oh, just one after
they
another.
They tried.
It's an elusive thing. And you can ask the Chicago Bears. You can ask the Cleveland Browns. You can ask the Miami Dolphins. I mean, how many teams have we watched spend pick after pick after pick trying to find the guy?
That even goes back to Tom Burleson. You remember him?
Yeah, Tom, I remember Tom Burleson. Yes. Yes. He had a big mustache, right?
How about Pete Cross? Remember him?
I don't remember him.
You don't remember Pete Cross?
No, what era was
that? Come on, he's an original Sonic.
I don't remember him.
Okay.
Hey, by the way, the things that we heard from Russell Wilson there before, where he's talking about, I want to go out there and put on a show, and I want kids around the world to emulate me. I hear those same things out of Jim before every time we get on the air.
He is inspirational.
Well, I've got the same work ethic that Russell has.
Yeah, oh, certainly you do. You're here before everybody. You stay later than everybody. You're in the film room. It's what you do, man.
Yeah, that's true. Except for on those occasions when I say, hey, do you guys mind if I leave a segment early so I can go watch my kid play basketball? You know, one of the things that I really appreciated about Russell Wilson, though, was giving up his starting job to Drew Brees in this Pro Bowl game because he's not thought, well, okay, this might be his last time playing because there's some question about Brees and whether he's going to return or retire.
Yeah, he's... I appreciate the dude. I really, we can talk about this, the corniness of him and whatever. If that's your biggest complaint is, yeah, he's kind of corny here and there.
Yeah.
You're in a good place.
Bring on the corn.
This franchise is in a good place at the most important spot, the most elusive spot in football.
My dad's corny. I love corny.
That's good.
Corny's great.
Let's try to play as fast as possible. I felt like it would be a fun thing to do, and I didn't necessarily think that it would hurt my game too much at some points, and I said, well, I mean, we'll try to go as fast as possible the first 5-6 holes, but I mean, I took my time on, or a little time on putts and all the shots, and we just ran in between, and I played quite well in the beginning, so we just kept going.
The voice of Sebastian Soderberg played a 97-minute round in Dubai, 75 shots in 97 minutes. Now, what would the normal round be, Jim? You're the golf guy. How much faster is
that? 4 hours.
That's average. Four hours.
Yeah,
really four.
Yeah, if you're playing a twosome in a tour event, European tour or PGA tour, 4 hours, something like that. But he was he was playing by himself because there was an odd number who had made the cut were in the final round there in Dubai, and so he just I was watching videos of it. He was jogging after every shot, and he felt like he could have had a better time if he hadn't missed every fairway. He missed every fairway, but he shot a 75. Pretty good stuff.
Man, he was walking, no carts.
Yeah, he was walking, but he was actually jogging.
He was by himself, though, huh?
By himself. He had a caddy.
Does that happen often? I don't recall seeing that.
So the caddy has to run
alongside. Usually
they
have what they call a marker, and a guy will play with you, even though he's not officially in the tournament. But in this one, they just let him go by himself.
Huh.
Yeah.
But was there somebody in front of him? A group in front of him?
No, he was the first one off. He had the worst score.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, even if he's playing fast,
he had the worst score.
Okay. Yeah. Still, 97 minutes.
Yeah.
Heck of a pace.
Did you know we're getting closer to the golf show returning?
Is that right?
Yeah, we are. We're getting closer. Matt Nelson is on the edge of his seat in there.
He's been asking every day, Jim, when can we roll this out again? Jim, when? Please.
I never knew it went away.
Because we're getting closer and closer to the Masters. It's a tradition.
Is that when it starts, in line with the Masters?
The Masters.
I can't wait to hear that corny, hokey piano music.
Ooh. The azaleas are in full bloom.
Magnolia Drive. Jim Nance.
I kind of like that.
Do you?
Yeah.
Dave?
What do you like?
I just like the
golf show.
I like hearing Nance speak over at the music.
I cannot stand the music they play for that dramatic piano music.
Oh, come
I'm supposed to bust out crying or something when I hear that. It's not getting anybody fired up.
It's more nostalgic. It's more just you're thinking about it.
I get goosebumps every time they play it.
I don't get that. I just kind of enjoy
it. Here's what I got for it. Okay? I think about your
Dave
master,
hates the Masters.
Master of music.
All right, coming up, we're going to...
Wait, Bob, stop talking for a second.
No, Bob, talk away. Take us to break. Let's get some walking...
We're late, Jim. We got
to get some walking papers on there.
Will Tiger Woods win another green jacket this year?
No. We're going to open up the phone lines for you. Want to get you Kobe fans. Maybe you weren't a fan. Maybe it's just somebody you admired from afar, somebody you named your child after, like Michael Bumpus. It's all over the map. There's no wrong opinion here. We'll say that. All I would say is just be respectful. There's no need to come on here and start calling names or anything. But you want to share an opinion? Phone lines are there for you. 421-3776, toll-free 866-979-3776. Taking your calls, your thoughts on Kobe Bryant, what he meant to the game, what he meant to you. All of that coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.